Mickey Hart here, you're listening to the GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Alright, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour brought to you by AIB. With me in studio today, no Mikey today, it's just Colin, myself and Conan. Conan, how's it going?
The dream team are back together.
The dream team, and we don't even have to bring in a pundit. We're that confident now, just the two of us. We don't need any Barry Cowles.
There's no division nonsense, do we? It's just us two for a flat hour.
Do not tune out, it is not us two for an hour. It's actually a great show today, Conan, because we have Colm O'Rourke, the legend, the Meath legend, is going to join us on the show. Obviously manager of Simonstown, who won the county title in Meath for the very first time at the weekend on Sunday. His son Shane in midfield, a great day for the O'Rourke family. He's obviously moved into Simonstown, used to play with Screen. So, you know, there's a great story there. A lot of his brothers and his nephews play with Screen. His son plays with Simonstown. So it's, you know, they didn't beat Screen in the final or anything, but Screen are one of the top teams in Meath. We also have Pádraig Mahoney joining us on the show. Obviously finished off the year in brilliant style, lost at the weekend with Ballygunner, but his form was brilliant when he eventually got back into the team after his leg break. So we're going to ask him all about the leg break. We're going to ask him about missing that free against Kilkenny. Unfortunately for him, we're going to have to find out something about that. So it's a great show, but at the start, Conan, we've had some good news this week and we've had some bad news this week. The bad news is it's the tale of two midfielders.
The bad news is Sean Kavanagh didn't retire, and the good news is Dick Clerkin did retire.
I'm delighted Sean Kavanagh is not retiring. Like, I can't believe he's only 33. I can't believe this was ever even up for debate. It's like Andy Moran, he's not that old. Everyone's writing these lads off.
That's a young man's game though.
Well, that's the proof of it. And okay, Sean's not a midfielder anymore, he's a full forward. And without his bit of presence in there in the full forward line, Tyrone really need him to hang on. And not just for next year, for potentially the year after as well.
I was surprised to see him even just sort of, his tweet was one more for the road. And I know he clarified it again and said he's going to be around in 2017. But you're right. Like, and he was so important. He's not like this guy. Like Dick Clerkin had that great statement in the Examiner where he told this tale. He was getting warmed up and he was ready to come on, and then all these young lads just came on ahead
Dick's
of him.
Dick's actually a great writer. He stopped writing for the Examiner, and I always liked his columns when he was writing. They're great.
But like him and Sean Kavanagh at the moment couldn't be farther apart. Like that Ulster final, you go back to this year, Tyrone were 4 points down and they were done. When Donegal are 4 points up in a final, that's it, it's game over. And it was only because Sean Kavanagh decided to come out the field, he's got that free role, he just took the bull by the horns and he literally started charging through Donegal, and the 2 points he scored as well were unbelievable. I just don't think Tyrone could have gotten anywhere near winning that Ulster final without him. Is that important to them?
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any there. And he said as well that couldn't finish like that. Well, his tweet was, "I'm a lucky man, hope to be fit and healthy enough to pull on my beloved red hand jersey in 2017. Couldn't finish like that." Now, Sean, if you wanted to finish, no one's going to be remembering you for getting sent off that time against you. I'm pretty sure you've enough money in the bank that that's not going to be their memory of you. But probably in Sean's own head, that's, you know, why he didn't just want to leave it on. It's more for himself than anybody else. But Sean Kavanagh is a legend. Like, he's not going to be remembered for a silly sending off.
Yeah, it would be a nice stick for people like me to beat him with then forever. You know, like Steven Gerrard slipping, for example. It doesn't matter that he's won a Champions League. Like, but remember that time he slipped?
You are a bitter Derryman, though.
Yeah, I bloody hate him. Like, I wrote a piece, in fairness to him, last year. It was after the Ulster final, and it was, you just mentioned the word legend, and I had actually written, saying there are legends. And then there's Sean Kavanagh. Like, you know, he's spanned three different teams now with Mickey Hurt, and he's been central to all of them. And he is just this guy who I really hate. Like, you know, obviously I respect everything he's doing and I love him as a footballer, but as a Derryman, it's just so hard to like him. And I think that's the biggest compliment you can pay him, when you're watching someone going, "Christ, I hate your man."
Yeah.
Like, it is such a big compliment to pay an opposition player, and the fact that he's just been so prominent against Derry teams and then against better teams as well throughout the years.
Yeah, and I'm not going to patronise Dick Clerkin by saying Dick Clerkin's in the same league as Sean Kavanagh, because he's not. He's like, Dick Clerkin won't be remembered as a legend of the game, but he'd be remembered as a bloody solid midfielder who can break even with a lot of players, you know. And
yeah,
one thing about Dick I always thought, the older he got, the more settled he got on the ball. He's scoring with his left foot. It's almost like he was putting a lot more work into his game, into improving his game in his 30s. And maybe that's being unfair of him, because he had his reputation when he was younger, himself and Lennon, as a bloody tough midfield partnership. And Dick would have been known as a hardy kind of, you know, fecker who's going to get you if he can. Yeah. I think maybe he went away with that and started kicking a lot more football in the last few years.
Playing bloody football. Dick had this great ability to sort of stop time. It's just like, you know, it was like when Dick Clerkin came to town, it seemed like nothing else mattered. Even that whole build up to the day, you knew Monaghan were coming up the road or you were going to Clonus, and it was like, this asshole again. Like, you know, you have to get prepared for him, like, and he's going to be bringing everything he can. It's going to be blood, there's going to be thunder, there's going to be shoulder challenges, he's going to grab someone by the neck, it's going to be chaos. But it will feel like for 70 minutes when Dick Clerkin's there that nothing else matters outside of that little pitch that you're in. Like, in a way, now the fact that he's gone as well, you look back and think that is a beautiful thing. Like, and he's not as good a player as Sean Kavanagh was, but he just had this brilliant ability to make it feel like the earth was going around, like it was revolving around that one little GA pitch that you were at on a
beautiful
Sunday.
That's a beautiful thing, Conor. He's also the last link to the 1990s football. Yeah. Back when football was for men, Conor, and there was no hand passing, and you could get a good kick pass into the full forward line. There was no diving, there was no sledging. It was pure, it was beautiful. Down were the team, Kerry were coming back towards the end. But anyways, I'm only talking nonsense. But he is the link because he got his first game for Monaghan back when the league started in October. You're too young to remember that. You know, you play three league games before Christmas and then finish it off after Christmas. It was madness, really.
Jesus. What about the club player?
Well, there you go. No, at that time, there was a 13-day rule and it was enforced. So, you know, that's what we're all pining to get back. But we'll move on from Dick, because I want to talk quickly before we get on to Colm O'Rourke about Slot Neil, because what they're about to do, or what they could potentially do this year, is unprecedented, really. They have won the Camogie Ulster title, they've won the Hurling Ulster title, and at the weekend, or after winning the quarterfinal of the senior football, they won 12-7 against the Fermanagh champions, Derry Gonnelly. This could be an Ulster treble, which is beyond belief for a small area like Slot Neil.
It's really hard to explain to people as well. I think, you know, some people might be guilty of thinking, oh, Slot Neil have won again. Like, this does not happen. It has never happened. Like,
what size of a club are we talking about here? Or a parish?
You go, you know that Glen Shane mountain that separates North Derry and South Derry? You're going up that mountain and you just take this turn off and you're going through these little country roads, and like if someone's guiding you there, you'd be like, where the hell is he taking me here? And then all of a sudden this, I don't know how to describe it, this massive clubhouse opens up. This, like, the facilities are amazing. There's three or four pitches, one big field dedicated to car parks. It's just like, this is the centre of the universe and there's nothing else to do there but play football and hurling and Camogie. It's an incredible place, like, but it's a small club. Like, Mahara is just further down and that would be the town. And that is, like, that's not even a big town either, like, relatively, right. But that would sort of be the big area around there. And Slot Neil is just sort of this outskirts of it on the mountain. And it's just
unbelievable.
It's amazing what they're doing. And yes, like, they've won four Derry hurling titles in a row, but before that, they hadn't won in 20 years. You know, they've won three Derry football titles in a row. They've only won one before that. Like, they've won four overall.
And not so, just concentrating on football. Like, I mean, Camogie and hurling, obviously, strong too. So they're like, it's almost like the perfect GA club.
Yeah, it is. And, like, it is a Gaeltacht area now. And I remember Joe Brawley wrote 2 years ago, he said they are Eamon de Valera's version of the perfect Ireland. You know, and it's true in a way. Like, and there are these real hard men. Like, you know, you knew when you were going to Slot Neil, especially if it was a Friday night and it was raining, like, you weren't up for it. Like, because you knew that they were up for every single breaking ball a lot more than you were. And It's proper men, proper Gael sort of area. Like,
And they have Brendan Rodgers playing with them, who I've just very immature that whenever I hear Brendan Rodgers, Craig Cash by Brendan Rodgers, I just can't get my head around that name. That name should not be playing GA. I don't know why.
I'll tell you what, when I hear Brendan Rodgers, if it's the Celtic manager, I think about the Derry player.
Really?
That's the biggest compliment they can pay him. But, and it might be easy to dismiss, like, an Ulster hurling title like this. That's the first time a Derry club's ever won it.
Yeah.
They beat Lough Gael, who were All-Ireland champions in 2012.
Yeah.
Like, last year, the interim champions got to the All-Ireland final. Like, the Ulster hurling isn't something to be sniffed at either. Especially when no one in Derry has won it before. And there are a lot more successful clubs in Sloughneagan, Derry, hurling-wise.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Back in 1987, Conan, Portlaoise won the Leinster Club football final. Mm. And Portlaoise were very, very strong back then. They beat Parnells after a replay in Newbridge. I remember being at it with my father. And then after that, Portlaoise hurlers got to the Leinster final and they're playing Rathnew. Mm. And they were 2 points up against Rathnew in injury time, and Rathnew got a goal to win the game, and that would have been a Leinster double for Portlaoise. Just a, you know what, yeah, I mean, for yeah. a club to win a provincial double, like I can't think offhand any club that's done it. I know this isn't live radio, but please tweet us or send us some sort of message if there has been clubs who've been able to double up on provincial honours.
You're still talking about that missed opportunity in 1987.
Yeah, but like it would have been an absolutely massive achievement, and to think how long a road it is to get back for two teams to get back to that level, to be that close to do that double, you know, it just puts in context how hard it is and what potential you know what Sloughneagan are doing at the moment.
Do you know what sort of started all this? Like they hadn't won a title. They won a Derry football title in 2004, and we thought they should have won more, and they didn't. And the team sort of went away. And in 2014, they were playing Ballinderry, who were going for four in a row. And it was just the very last second
they got the goal, Gerald
Bradley. And that was the thing. Was it over the line? Was it not? And that changed everything. And then all of a sudden, they're the dominant force in Derry. And now they're about to be the dominant force in Ulster. Well, they already are. But like, it's incredible just how a little thing like that has changed everything. And I mean, I remember at the start of that year, I don't mean to keep going on, but I'm getting excited because it's an Ulster fest today. But like,
it is actually.
We played Sloughneagan at our pitch in the first league game. And we were cursing at the halfback who like sort of let the guy in for a goal. And we lost by a goal in the end. And Mickey Moran came in afterwards. And it was a sincere talk that he gave us. He said, listen, go out and win every game. Stop trying to stay in this division. You're good enough to go and win it. Believe that. Eventually, we got relegated. Didn't listen to Mickey Moran's words. They went on to the All-Ireland final, having won the Ulster title. And like it was just... One team listened to Mickey Moran that day, and one team didn't.
He was just Plough Mawson after that. Yeah. He always do that. Mickey Moran's just a gentleman. That's
lovely fella.
Right, well, we'll leave it there, Colin, because we're delighted to say we have Mead legend Colin O'Rourke on the line. Colin, congratulations on Sunday. It's Simonstown's first ever county title, and you said after the game they're finally up there where they belong.
Yeah, well, I suppose everybody wants to be a senior champion, and Simonstown winning for the first time was a really special occasion. We've been trying a long time, and I've been involved with the club a good while. Twice before, as senior manager in finals, we lost them, and I went away for a while, but came back in the last couple of years, and thankfully now it's worked out.
And so it's a completely new team then than the teams you managed in 03 and 04?
Yes, absolutely new team. A lot of very young players, actually. We had two 18-year-olds, two 19-year-olds, a couple of 20-year-olds. So the bulk of the team was very young. And then we had three or four in their 30s as well. So it was an unusual mix. But anyway, I think it worked well.
You said after the match you were getting a bit worried that Simonstown were seen as a soft towny team. You know, you threw away a lead, and I think it was the 0-3 final. You're 9 points up, and then you built up a lead this time. You know, you've kind of banished that idea now that Simonstown are soft.
Yeah, well, this team is physically very tough, and the harder the battle they were in, the better they seem to enjoy it. But you know yourself, teams do get reputations which are sometimes not merited, and I think everybody had this idea about Simonstown in Mead for the last 10 years that they were a soft touch, that when a game would go into a battle that Simonstown would always falter. So it was nice to sort of get rid of that image, because it's not a nice image for a team to have. But certainly never again, I think, will anybody ever think that, because it's a physically very big team, very strong, and they excelled at broken ball, where you need tough, hardy players. So, and they were very good at tackling and getting the ball back. So they're the sort of hallmarks of a completely different side than one with a tag of being a soft touch.
Yeah, has the landscape changed in club football in Meath since when you were managing back in 03 and 04? You know, is it more tactical now, or is it pretty much the same thing?
No, it definitely is more tactical. The whole, I suppose, Cluxton has sort of set a template for the game that everybody is trying to copy in terms of kickouts. And we worked hard on the Ashbourne kick out, and we put a lot of pressure on them and pushed right up on it. And we had a very dominant midfield pairing with my own Shane and Conor Nash. So we pushed up hard on everybody because we wanted them to kick long, because we have they're two giants, and not only can they catch, they can also kick. And kick. The both of them got 2 points each on Sunday.
Yeah, so four from midfield.
They couldn't run it. It's a fair platform to have with our midfielders.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. It must have been nice for you to win one with Shane.
I think, you know, with the benefit of hindsight now, I didn't want to say too much at the time, but it's probably the nicest feeling of all. I think anybody who has been involved in a successful team would give it all away to see their own son winning something. And he's had a tough time with injuries. He's never really been able to get to the heights that he probably was entitled to. So it was a fantastic thing for him, because he suffered a lot.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because I know Shane has obviously suffered a lot, but it must be difficult for you too, seeing him going through all that, and you're kind of powerless to help him. He's just been plagued by injury after injury.
Yeah, well, 10 years ago he looked like he was going to be one of the best young footballers in the country, and I suppose he would have expected that he'd be playing constantly with me at a high level, but he's had so many injuries. 3 hip operations later, he's probably produced the best football of his club life, certainly this year, but he's still hampered, an inability to train much, very sore after games, spends a lot of time in the gym. But it suited perfectly with me in charge, because he did his training in the gym a lot of the time. He'd maybe do one night a week with the lads on the pitch. Everybody knew that. Everybody was very happy with that. The players never questioned it, because they knew he couldn't do the same as the rest of them. And probably a bit the same with Seamus Kenny as well, who Seamus was playing with the club for 19 years, and he had a most brilliant match on Sunday. And again, the fact that the two of them were able to be treated completely different to others, it really suited us in the end.
What's your relationship like with Shane, like in a footballing sense? You know, down through the years, have you gone hard on him, or do you kind of just let him do his own thing, and or do you encourage him, or do you tell him he was brilliant, or is it tough love? What way have you been with him?
I think I've always been easy on him. I suppose we enjoy absolute perfect father-son relationship insofar. He doesn't talk to me very often, and I think that that suits both parties very, very well. But I think we sort of understand each other perfectly. I've been involved with nearly every team he's played with, like at club level at the very beginning. Myself and a fella called Jim McCabe started with a group of fellas, I think 24 or 5 years ago, and 3 of them were still playing on Sunday, and Shane and Mark McCabe and Michael O'Rourke were the 3. So we've been together. He passes no remarks on me. He's been involved with teams in St. Pat's. He was on a team that won an All-Ireland and another one that was beaten in an All-Ireland final. So he enjoyed a lot of success.
Yeah,
along the line.
You have a lot of experience together.
No, together most of the time. Like, I haven't been involved in the club scene for the last 5 or 6 years until I came in again last year. So anyway, I was delighted the only reason, maybe not the only reason, because I've been involved with Simonston all the time, but I like the idea of him maybe getting a senior medal. So that was certainly one objective I had when I first took over.
Yeah, do you see Simonstown as your club now, Colm? I know you're a big screen man, you know, so obviously played there all your life. Is there a bit of a tension in me since the move, or are you still see yourself as screen but managing Simonstown?
No, I think Screen got rid of me. They gave me away on a free transfer a long time ago. So I've been involved in Simonstown really since Shane started playing. So over 20 years involvement. Like, my brothers are still very heavily involved in Screen. But I had another brother, Mel, who had 2 sons involved with Simonstown on Sunday. One was playing, one was a sub. So there's my nephews play with Screen. So there is a bit of friendly rivalry, but all the nephews in Screen have won championships, so I think they were delighted to see that the other O'Rourkes on the Simonstown side now got what they had got in the last number of years with Screen.
Yeah, you actually had to manage against Screen in 2004. We played Screen that year in the Leinster final. Your Simonstown manager was probably more difficult back then.
Yeah, well, some people at that time said, Yoshi, you can't lose today. And I thought, well, I can't really win because obviously I wanted Simonstown to win. And my nephews were playing with Screen and my brothers were all supporting Screen. So it was an unusual one to be involved in. And it looked like history was going to repeat itself because Screen were in the semi-final this year with Ashbourne. So in a way, I was happier that it wasn't Screen involved. Obviously, if Simonstown wouldn't win the championship, I'd want Screen to win it. But I didn't like the idea of maybe having to take on Screen again in a final.
No, it wouldn't be ideal. What do you make of the Meath Club Championship, Colin? Because the final obviously is only on Sunday. Now, Meath have been out of the championship since July the 9th. Why is it gone? Like, you were blessed with the weather. If you're a footballing team, you're just lucky. But like, that could have been an awful dogfight on Sunday with a strong wind, and maybe the best footballing team might not have won in those conditions.
Yeah, we were lucky. It was a lovely day. There was a huge crowd. Everything was just perfect. And then we went and played our best. So it was one of those special days all round. But there was, I think, no football played for something like 5 weeks because Meath were in an under-21B hurling final and there was other various things. Like, it certainly shouldn't be running this late. We got lucky this year. But certainly, I think you shouldn't, like Meath Arton, a team that has been in the latter stages of the All-Ireland recently, and the championship final was played on the bank holiday Monday last year and just one day earlier this year. It shouldn't happen like that. Yeah, at the same time, I have to say, people always complaining about club football and no club football, and it's all bullshit, or you can't say that on the radio.
Oh, you can. It's a podcast. You're okay.
Oh, it's a podcast. So anyway, like, I think we've played 25 competitive games this year with Simonstown. Now, if teams are getting over 20 games, as every club in Meath is getting, can't really complain too much.
How would you get that money?
The club season in Meath starts very early in February. I'd prefer if it started a bit later and ran on later, but when you're getting that many competitive matches, we had 13 league games.
Right.
We had 4 or 5 Fesh Cup matches and we had 8 championship matches. So, happy days in terms of fixtures. It's just the only issue we have all the time is we play a lot of games without our county players.
Yeah.
That's the only issue I have.
And would the league be taken seriously in Meath? Because I know in Leash it wouldn't be, you know, they are on paper, they're competitive games, but they wouldn't. Some of them would be and some of them wouldn't be.
Yeah, well, the same applies in Meath, I think, because we play an awful lot of the games without county players. Now, I'm just happy to be getting games.
Yeah.
But it would be nicer if you had your county men available to you. We had Sean Tobin, who's on the county panel this year, and he missed most of the league matches. So if you have 3 or 4 county men in your club, you really can suffer in the league. And then, you know, you have the problem maybe of relegation because you're never able to get out your best team, which is a bit unfair. Like, we struggled to stay up in the first division this year. Very much just avoided the drop because we had so many injuries and so many lads away with various teams. So we were a bit lucky, actually, to retain our Division 1 status.
Okay, right. And would you be pro this Club Players Association now that's just been set up? Like, I suppose if one of their ambitions is to shorten the inter-county season, you have a county like Meath who are out at July the 9th, it still wouldn't really make any difference for their club season because, you know, they had all the time in the world and they're still playing their championship about now,
yeah,
the same time as Mayo, who are in the All-Ireland final into a replay almost October.
Yeah, well, it's about that the club. Well, the other side of it is we played a quarter final, semi final, and final in the space of 3 weeks. So you have no games for a while and then a load of games together. So, but like, it's up to each individual county board. They should be able to sort out their club fixtures. I don't know what the club thing can do. Obviously, Pádraic Duffy is trying to shorten the inter county season. And I'd be very much in favour of that because you can't ever get the joy and satisfaction at county level that most of the people who are involved in a local club can do from winning a championship, whether it's junior, intermediate or senior. So maybe I'm a bit of a bogman anyway. I just prefer the local scene.
Yeah, you're probably talking to one as well. Finally, Colm, you said that Simonstown not winning a county title was a pebble in your shoe. That's how you described it. Is managing Meath at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
I have a lot of chips on my shoulder. I'm completely paranoid of most things. But I think now, I suppose it was a bit like Simonstown to be involved with a team that with Shane that won a county championship. He's been lucky. He won Leinster's and All-Ireland's at college's level. So I don't know whether he'd like to go back in. But if I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And that you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
No, well, you are the voice of reason. Where is this love affair with Dublin come out of with Brawley? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, you see, Joe would be like the wind. It changes around fairly often. So, like, it could be Mayo next year or it could be Kerry. And, you know, so Joe will change anyway. We won't have to worry about him. His principles are completely movable feet.
It's usually who wins the All-Ireland who with the wind blows in that direction.
Well, I think everybody wanted Mayo to win.
Yeah.
So, I suppose we were all sort of half Mayo supporters for the championship, and probably we continue to be, because I do admire their resilience. I don't know how any man could get up and come back after what they have experienced. So they're men of character.
Yeah, and that actually Ken McGrath, the Waterford hurler, said that that's what character is. It's not necessarily, character can be winning a tight game, but character can also be coming back year after year after not winning, you know, the big one and not throwing in the towel.
Well, absolutely. It was the same with us with Simonstown this year. Last year, I thought we were going to have a great chance, and we dominated the game against Nafina and managed to get beaten in it and put out of the championship. And at that stage, I said, Jesus, will this ever work out? So this year, all the little breaks went our way. We got breaks in almost all the big games that kept us alive. And then we produced a masterclass on Sunday. But, you know, it took a lot of hard work to get there.
Yeah, finally, you have Road now, who are a real solid, strong team, you know, who perform in Leinster. Meath teams in the last 10 years, Colm, have been pretty poor in Leinster, really.
Absolutely, and I think that a lot of the Meath clubs haven't really paid much attention to the Leinster Championship, because when you win a championship here, just apart from the Mahonies, there's been an awful lot of teams win a championship and then they go away, and winning the championship is the end in itself. And I'd say if you looked at the Simonstown team in action in Coppers last night, they probably would say that there's not much chance of them ever getting on the pitch, never mind the Leinster Club Championship. So we'll have to try and get them back down to earth this week and have a look at. But as you say, Road are a fairly solid outfit. We actually played them a few times in challenge matches over the years, and they gave us, I think, hammerings every time. So anyway, we'll try and muster the troops by this weekend.
Yeah, you're lucky enough you have 2 weeks before you have to face them anyway, so let them enjoy it. Colm, thanks very much for taking the call and best of luck in Leinster.
Thank you very much, Colm.
All right, up next we'll talk to Waterford's Pádraig Mahony.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. And it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera showed it didn't look great, there was, maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, and look, he didn't lose, like. Let's go!
10% luck, 20% skill, 15%
concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, back in club and county. All right, delighted to say we've Waterford's Pádraig Mahony on the line. Pádraig, you lost on Sunday, so it wasn't a great way to end the year, but I suppose looking back on the year as a whole, you must have been pretty happy with the way it went.
Yeah, look, I suppose at the start of every year, you know, you set yourself a couple of goals, and obviously for myself this year it was a little bit different, and, you know, just even getting back out there, I suppose it's something that I look back on with a lot of satisfaction. But at the end of the day, you know, you want to be winning silverware, and unfortunately we fell short at Waterford, and obviously it was disappointing as well last Sunday with Ballygunner, because, you know, we did set out at the start of the year to win a Munster club, and unfortunately we didn't do that. But look, next year won't be too far coming around either, you know.
Yeah, when you get to the stage with your club that you're winning three in a row, you know, the ambitions then move past the county and, you know, into the Munster. But you were very close.
Yeah, we were. Look, and a lot of credit must go to Thurles Arsfield too. You know, they're a top team, and you know, if you look down through their team, they've plenty of, you know, household inter-county players with Tipperary. So look, it's nothing to be ashamed of. I suppose we're disappointed we fell that bit short, but look, I suppose at the start of every year too, you know, if you win a county, you have to be a small bit happy with that too. And as I said, look, next year we'll be back and we'll be giving another go, you know.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing your comeback this year, Park, because it was a slow burner, really. It was like, he's back fit now, he's getting a few minutes in the league, and then you were only getting a few minutes for a good while, and it wasn't until you got back in for the Munster final that you were actually starting all the time. Was that difficult, you know, with your patience, just to try and say, look, relax, Derek's kind of looking after me here, or were you just mad to get back in?
Yeah, it was a weird one, really, because I suppose... you know, over the last 6 or 7 years with Waterford, I've kind of been fortunate enough where I've been kind of playing most of the games, and you know, so it was obviously, first of all, it was tough missing last year because, you know, you're so used to being out there. And then I suppose when I did come back then, you know, it's only natural that you're going to have a spell, you know, when you have to earn your place back. And I suppose I was working very, very hard behind the scenes, and then when I suppose, you know, I was getting a couple of minutes in the league, and but then I suppose coming up towards the championship, I didn't really know where I stood really, and I suppose you could nearly say that Derek took a chance in a way, throwing me in against Clare in the Munster semi-final. And I suppose I was happy enough with how things went that day, and you know, I was grateful for the, I suppose, the you know, the confidence that they even had in me, because I hadn't had much game time even in challenge matches. We probably had a 40 minute run out against Limerick down in Fort Island when we were on a training camp, and that was the only really competitive, you know, action I had going into the Clare game. So I suppose it was just delighted to get out there really then at that stage, you know.
Yeah, you came on after 63 minutes in that game. Like, I mean, that's the heat of a championship battle where you're usually used to starting games. Like, I don't know about you, but I used to hate coming on just for 7 minutes because you really need a bit of luck that you get on a ball earlier, or else your head is all over the place.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, with any game really, if you're coming on, you know, the person you're marking, he's had plenty of time to get up to the pace of the game, and then you're coming in and you have a short window to make an impact, you know, and that is tough too, you know. And but I suppose, look, it's a 20-man game now, the way the game is gone, that, you know, you're going to have your five subs used every single game. And so, you know, you have to at times be patient, and you have to say to yourself, look, whatever your role is, you just have to be ready to do it. And and that's the way I took it. Like, I was just happy to be, you know, because for a while there, I didn't even know if I was ever going to get back to any sort of level, like inter-county. And so, you know, you have to be just, you know, patient, and when your time comes, then you just have to take it.
Yeah, because you scored 190 in the league just before you broke your leg, and then just a short year later, you're probably worried, are you ever going to get back into the team? Like, it's mad how, you know, you almost had to prove yourself all over again to the management.
Yeah, and look, I think that's the beauty of the game too, you know, that you're going to have the highs and the lows. And I suppose it was kind of mad really, because we were going from such a high in Waterford and winning the National League, because, you know, I think it was our third time ever winning it, and a week later then my year was over. And so, you know, it was hard to kind of come to terms with that too, because, you know, we thought like we were going into that championship, you know, full of confidence, and it was what you dreamed, really, you know, being a part of a team on such a high, and next minute it's gone. But, you know, that's just the way it is. And I suppose it kind of made me that bit extra determined this year, you know, in terms of putting in the extra bit of effort to get back out there, because, you know, we kind of had a taste of success, and once you get that kind of taste of it, you know, you want more of it. And and obviously, you know, we're disappointed because we didn't have any silverware to look back on this year.
Yeah, just going back to the injury, was it hard not to feel sorry for yourself? You know, like I mentioned, you scored 190 in the league. It was going so well for you. And suddenly, you know, you get the news that the year's over and suddenly you're panicked, am I ever going to play again? You know, because with a lot of injuries, there's a grieving period. Like, were you going around with a face on you for a while?
I suppose, look, I kind of, in fairness, I actually took it pretty well. Like, I knew at that stage, look, there's nothing I can do about it now. And to be honest, like, the way the game has gone and, you know, the demands that are playing on intercounty players, a place on intercounty players, I kind of just said to myself, look, I can use this opportunity now to kind of, you know, maybe recharge the batteries and, yeah. And I suppose enjoy myself too and, you know, do a few things like that I didn't ever have the opportunity before. Like, I would have gone away on holidays with all my friends and in the middle of summer and, you know, going off to concerts and things like that. And I suppose in a way it was kind of, I used my time pretty well and I enjoyed myself. And, you know, I suppose it was the one opportunity where I said, look, there's no point in, you know, feeling sorry for myself. You just get on with it. And look, in fairness, I had good people controlling the recovery from the minute I broke my leg to right up until I made the comeback. So, you know, I was in good hands the whole time as well, and getting good advice, which was key.
Yeah, I saw you said Derek made sure to try and keep you as part of the setup when you were injured, which is so important because you can feel that little bit isolated at times.
Yeah, look, and sure, look, Derek's a great manager, and I suppose he would have put in a, you know, once he got the management job at Wofford, you know, a lot of us would have been saying right now is the time where, you know, we have to put in that bit of extra effort. And you know, because we had built up, I suppose, close enough relationship down through the college years with De La Salle and Wynn Harties and all Ireland colleges, and a lot of that team then was in there with Derek. And I suppose in 2014, when I say before I broke my leg, you know, we were having a bad year and we kind of felt like we had to owe back to Derek again the following year, and because, you know, we didn't do what he was putting into it any justice at all. And then obviously when I broke my leg then, you know, he made sure to keep me in the loop. And because you know, at times you do feel isolated because you're there, you've very little to offer to the setup because you're there walking around on crutches. Like, you know, I couldn't even pick up a water bottle, and do you know what I mean? Help out in some way, I would have just been happy to be, you know, doing anything really.
So how did he keep you in the loop then? Had you kind of talked to the team or just?
Nah, like, sure, look, Derek's, at the end of the day, Derek's the manager and he has the selectors, but, you know, he would have known, like, say, that I would have been good friends with certain players and things like that. And, you know, even just keep encouraging lads at training and, you know, just to be there, really. And because, you know, he just made sure that I didn't just, you know, I could easily, I suppose, of just saying, like, look, I'll forget about 2015 and I'll just concentrate in 2016 and walking away from the year completely. But he was adamant that I went to all the training camps and, you know, I was just treated like the exact same player as any other players that are 100% fit. And, you know, it helped because I knew straight away then that, right, look, I'm thinking about 2016 here. I'm dealing with the physios and, you know, the trainers. I had access to everything in terms of my recovery. And that started straight away, really, from, I suppose, the week I got home after the hospital. And right from there on, like, you know.
Yeah, what about, when did you get your mojo back yourself, do you think? Because, you know, obviously you mentioned you came on in the 63rd minute against Clare, then you scored 6 against Tip. With the less said about that game, the better. You got 8 against Wexford, and the best game I've ever seen you playing was against Kilkenny in Croke Park. When did the confidence start clicking back into place?
I suppose, look, between the league and championship, I suppose I kind of felt like that there was a change and that, you know, I was getting that bit of match sharpness from, you know, a number of games and training and that. And obviously then, look, sure, the Kilkenny game was, I suppose, the highlight in terms of me knowing when, right, I'm back at that level now, like, you know, and because, that was, I suppose, there's no better place to show it is up in Croke Park. And but sure, look, as I said, you know, we had to look forward to the next game and obviously things didn't go well for us against Kilkenny the second day. So for me, like, I'd still look at it as a disappointing year because, you know, we fell short, and I suppose that'll just be, you know, we'll have to store that and use it as our motivation for 2017.
Yeah, do you think the new style Waterford came at Kilkenny with suits your game, or it might suit Austin Gleeson's game a little bit? I know you won't want to criticise Derek's style because it went so well for you. You know, you've won a league with it and you got back competitive. But, you know, the more open, expansive game saw you get a lot more scores from play maybe than you would on another day.
Yeah, look, I think, we all know there's a lot does be made about the approach and the tactics that, you know, we might use and that. But to be honest with you, Colin, we didn't really change a whole lot between the Wexford All-Ireland quarterfinal and the first All-Ireland semi-final against Kilkenny. We kind of it's just the way the game panned out, like, really. And that's what I suppose maybe that happens at times when you go up to Croke Park, that it just takes on a life of its own. And
really,
obviously, we kind of said to ourselves that day, look, we cannot come out off this field with any regrets. And you know, we just said we were going to empty ourselves to the limit, and you just run up and down that field for as long as you can, and if it's 50 minutes or 70 minutes, whatever you have, you just do it. And obviously, when you get that bit of momentum behind you too, it can open up a little bit for you. And I think that's kind of what happened that day, really.
Yeah, because it looked like
no magic secret that we didn't change a whole lot, really, like, and it's just the way it panned out, to be honest.
I'm surprised to hear that, because it did look like a clear tactic that you were kind of changing things. You weren't packing the defence as much as you usually did, and you were maybe leaving four or five forwards up at all times. When you see Waterford in previous games, and, you know, Dan might have been Morris would have been isolated on his own in the full forward line, and that wasn't the case against Kilkenny, so it looked like it was a clear tactic.
Yeah, look, I think Croke Park is such a big place too, you know, that you can't
have the energy
to be on the move the whole time. And
yeah.
I think, like, looking back on maybe the Munster final and the quarter final against Wexford, just from my own perspective, maybe I wasn't getting back. I was getting down the field, but maybe I wasn't getting back up the field quick enough. You know,
yeah.
And I think we set out maybe more so as a half four line really that day against Kilkenny, the first day, that we do our work obviously, but we still have to get back up and do it on the scoreboard. And I think that's one thing that Derek has always said, like, as much as it's about, you know, helping others around you, you still have to get up and do the work up the scoring end. And maybe it was just we applied ourselves a bit more in terms of, you know, forward thinking and going, maybe, you know, just getting back, but also getting up quicker than we did in maybe the previous games.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I have to ask you about the free the second day. Like, did you connect? I didn't think, looking at the time, that you actually connected with it properly. What was it like from your point of view?
Yeah, sure. Look, I suppose, you know, I knew maybe straight away that it was going to struggle for leg, like, you know. And obviously then, looking back on the pictures after the game and seeing, like, that Owen was after, you know, going up a couple of foot over the crossbar.
Yeah,
you know, I suppose if it all that needed was another couple of inches, then it would have gone over, like, you know. And just look, that's the margins of the game, and, you know, you just have to take the good with the bad at times. And obviously, you know, it was tough few weeks, tough few months really after that Kilkenny game, because, you know, we felt like we were so close, and yet we're so far away now again from another All-Ireland semi-final, and, you know, there's so much work that has to be go back in to try and get back there, you know. So it is disappointing, because, you know, we sacrificed everything all year and we just came up a little bit short. And, you know, but as I said, that's sport really at the end of the day.
What are you thinking standing over a free like that, Park? Like, is there nerves? Is your heart racing? Or is the adrenaline going so much that the nerves aren't there and you're just trying to block it all out?
Yeah, I think, I said this a couple of weeks ago before the county final with the club in an interview, that one thing I'd always feel that I'm pretty good at is, you know, blocking out any kind of thoughts or feelings, and that I'd always stand over every free the exact same as any normal free, you know. And and I can honestly say that I stood over that free, done my same routine, same, you know, procedures as I do for any other free, whether it's a challenge match or practicing up in the hurling pitch in my club, or whether it's up in Thurles in front of whatever 40,000 people. And unfortunately, some don't go over, and that was just one of them that didn't. And, you know, obviously got it, I didn't go over, but look, what can I do? Can't dwell on it too much now, and just look forward to 2017, and hopefully, you know, we can get back to where we are and, you know, go a step further.
Yeah, I read some quotes from Derek McGrath saying that you work really hard on the mental side of the game, from visualisation to improving your mental approach, and that makes you cool under pressure. Is that, like, what kind of mental work do you do?
Yeah, look, I suppose we over the last number of years, you would be looking to give yourself that bit of an extra edge. And obviously, as a free taker, you know, visualization is huge, I think. And so what I did, maybe, you know, just simple things like you might look back on previous games where everything went right for you in terms of your free taking, and, you know, just analyse and breaking it down into small little margins. So I'd have maybe three or four things that I'd, you know, make sure in terms of, say, my conf, in terms of, you know, getting my confidence right before I hit a free. So in terms of my lift, you know, and just following through with the strike, and, you know, little simple things that just make sure that you do them every single time, and you won't go too far wrong, you know. And I think you should look at, it's like anything, the more you practice, the better you get at it, and that's the way it is, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose for any free taker, it's like, I often think of golfers when they hit a bad shot, what they're brilliant at is completely forgetting about that bad shot and coming back for the next one. Like, that didn't even happen, you know, blocking that kind of thing out.
Yeah, like, that's the one thing that I would have taken maybe from the likes of the golfers, and that is, you know, when I stand over a free, I visualise that it's already over the bar before I hit it. And if you do that, like, how can you be nervous or how can you be worried about the consequences if you've already put it over the bar? And I think it's just a good mental approach that I take to the freeze, and because even if you missed the previous one, you know, you're reassuring yourself that this one is already over. And just I think a lot about freeze, it is about confidence, and it's about, you know, having your routine and that you stick by it every time, you know.
Yeah, so are you back for next year yet? I know you started back pretty early last year. You're taking a break. What about the rest of the squad? Or has Derek got them back yet?
Nah, I suppose maybe this year they probably maybe might adopt a bit of a different approach, and it'd probably be another good few weeks before you get back into it. But the way the game has gone, I suppose lads are no fools either, and they're tipping away. The lads be tipping away in the gym, and, you know, making sure they don't go too much out of shape, because before you know it, once you turn the new year, you're into the National League and, you know, big games straight away from the middle of February. So, and then, you know, you're into the Championship, so there's no reason to be wasting,
no,
and, you know, letting yourself down too much. Obviously, it's winter season too, you know, and you have to enjoy yourself, and you have another life, I suppose, you know, you have to maybe catch up on too. And so that's the way, I suppose, I look at it anyway. But at the same time, you know, I won't be taking too much of a break either. You don't want to be going too much out of shape, and you want to just, you know, keep yourself tipping over. Really.
Yeah, that's a good point, because you don't want to be coming back with a bit of a belly and you're starting into that Division 1 league there. There's no easy games in that. You have to be nearly a Championship pace starting that one.
Yeah, exactly. I think I done that a few years ago now, and it didn't go too well. So I certainly won't be letting myself go too much anyway. But you look forward to the National League too, and, you know, you want to be doing yourself justice when you're out there as well. Like, so you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to be behind or a step off the pace. You want to just make sure that, you know, you're doing your bit. And I think, like, look, it's not, and the people be making a bit too much about maybe the lad teams going back training in November and December and that. You know what I mean? Like, we still, in fairness to Derek, last year we would never have overdone it in terms of, like, if you still had your, you know, you're still entitled to go out on your Saturday night and have your few drinks with the lads and your friends and whatnot. And I think that was, you know, it makes it more enjoyable too when, you know, you're not tied down completely from early doors or, you know, late, say, like this December. I'm sure Derek will probably adopt something similar this year where we won't be flogged in terms of Sunday morning sessions. You can still enjoy yourself on a Saturday night, and I think that's important to keep that part of it too, you know.
Yeah, you're lucky you have a very sensible manager with Derek McGrath anyways. But listen, come here, best of luck with everything. It's great to see you back this year. You know, and it was a brilliant finish to the year for you form-wise, so hopefully you'll bring it on through into next year.
So, thanks, Colin.
All right, up next, myself and Conan will have a look at the club fixtures this weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
Yeah, you have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
at me.
Out
of a crowded area, is it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
some decent games going on this weekend, Conan. Munster Club hurling. We've got Ballyhea from Clare against Turles Sarsfields. Turles Sarsfields obviously just knocked out Ballygunner at the weekend. Patrickswell play Glen Rovers from Cork. You know, two big ones there. We have Aulard de Balla and St. Rhinas. You know, Aulard de Balla are defending champions. Rhinas obviously won at the weekend. And you have Coola playing Boris Kilcotton from Laois. Boris Kilcotton definitely have the work cut out against Coola, who have a really, really good team. You know, will feel that they maybe should have performed better against Aulard last year in the final. Raharney from Westmead plays St. Mullins from Carlow, which I wouldn't say will, you know, throng the people towards that one. Funny enough one, we have the Waterford Senior Football Championship final between Ballinacorty and the Nair.
6th of November.
6th of November, Conan. Like, I mean, you know, Waterford, you know, out of the football a long time, but this just shows what happens in these dual counties, and that's, you know, it might only take one dual fella on the Waterford Senior Hurling team. They went a long way. And then, in my head, the traditional hurling counties will play off, always play the hurling off before the football, just to make sure that their hurling teams get into the provincial club because they have a better chance of getting there. You know, so now you have the Waterford football final on the 6th of November pushed back into no man's land, you know, and it just doesn't look fair.
So there's like inception levels of club players getting screwed over here, because you have the club hurlers having to wait for the county hurlers to finish up,
yeah,
because the county footballers are finished long ago. But then you have the club footballers waiting for the club hurlers to finish up because they're, yeah, waiting on the club. They're the county
hurlers. This is very messy. And like you said, like this Club Players Association, they've got their challenges are massive. Mm. You know, it's trying to fix all this kind of stuff. And we know 100% that the intercounty season is too long. But the dual issue is always going to create problems in those big counties,
yeah,
where there's players playing both, and like, I mean, you need double, you like literally need double that time in those, yeah, counties. So they're always going to, so they actually need, they need a lot of time. The intercounties, both intercounty seasons, like, we're not talking about 2 weeks. What good is 2 weeks to the likes of a Waterford, you know? So it's on the third week of October instead of the, you know, this needs a five six week shortening. It doesn't need a 2 week shortening.
Yeah, and that, but this is the worry. Like, the Club Players Association seems like it's going to be great, and there's a lot of people on board. But it's going to need to be there every year. Like, you know, we can't just come along, sort our fixtures, and then disappear again.
I know. I think it's set up now, and that's it. It's going to be like, my thing with the Club Players Association is the logistics of it. Like, I mean, the GPA need 32-33 reps for every county, mm, and they only have to look after a panel of 30. Like, if the CPA want reps for every county, they have maybe 60, 70 teams to have to represent,
yeah,
which all have 30 players on a panel of each one. So, like, I mean, being a voice, like, they might need 10 reps in each county, you know, or they might need a meet. Like,
every club's going to have a rep that feeds to a county might need, rep.
Yeah, so, like, the logistics of all that is very, very, very difficult. And then there's every level of, it's not just senior, it's junior, it's intermediate. So, like, it's just such a vast, difficult job they have. And I've the utmost respect for them for trying to do it.
I wrote a piece on the site there last week, and it's trying to tackle this issue of shortening the season, and I managed to put it on the 11 months, but you're not really, like, I figured out 8 weeks of a gap there that when the county season finished, you had 8 weeks to finish your club championship, and then it would start the provincial series and the club provincial series. But, like, you don't really take into consideration these dual counties,
no,
either, like, and there's so much problems here.
Yeah.
I don't know sort of how to go about it. Like, it looks great on paper, my thing, now, and everyone's like, oh, it's not a bad idea, because you can see where the gaps come, but, like...
Well, you've no other choice but to play, if it's a dual county, the dual players have to play every week, every weekend,
yeah,
and that's just the reality of it, whereas the football will play every second week,
yeah,
or the hurling will be every second week. But the dual players will play every week. And that's not the worst situation for them to be in, because they're not doing any... They don't have to do any real hard training.
Mm.
They're doing the enjoyable thing, playing games all the time. So I think if you play them off every second week and the dual just has to go every week,
yeah,
you probably will have enough time.
The biggest problem at the minute, and we don't need to go on it, but it's like, we're trying to fit a 16-month long season into a year, every year. Like, you know, and that's what we're doing. Like, we're going from... We're going from January to the following March every single year.
Yeah. The very obvious solution to all this is to separate both and not have intercounty to play intercounty and club to play club. And the intercounty, the players who have the potential to play both, pick at the start of the year, are you committing to club or county this year? And if you do that, they run parallel together and it's just like, it's just a beautiful thing.
That's very that'd be
it
very
won't happen. It's impossible to happen. Like, but like, that's what would just run it. Like, this is an like, there's no other competition in world sport that's trying to do what the GAA is trying to do. They're trying to keep everybody happy, and like, it's just, it's not really workable anymore, because the intercounty season is the level of preparation has gone so high now that they're like professional outfits, and they don't want the nuisance of the club interfering with that preparation, because it's so scientific. So I don't see any real solution outside of, you know, definitely shortening it by a lot, or else separate the two altogether.
I think your biggest problem there, and I think there's a lot we can get into it another day, but what happens to the players who aren't making the county team, and they're just there training all year with the county
panel? I've been there. That's a horrible situation.
But then they don't even have club to come back. Like, I know some of these lads, and they absolutely love coming back to the club then, and they play with a bit of confidence and stuff, and it's just such a great relief for them. And it's like their love for the club grows more when they're away, and it's great for them to come back in June, as it is in Derry's case most years. What happens then? Like, do they not get to play?
Yeah, that's definitely a tough gig. But on a lot of county panels, those fellas that are the 26, 27, 28, 29, they're not even being released to the club anyways.
Yeah.
Like, which is completely wrong. Those lads should be allowed to play a club. I've been on Laois panels where I haven't been getting a game. Not very often, because it was very good, obviously. But there was one year in particular, Mikko's last year, where I wasn't getting a look in. And I begged Mikko, can I go play with Portlaoise this weekend? No. No one's being released for the club. I'm like, Jesus. Like I said, I'm not getting any games. Just let me play with them. Let me enjoy that and see, can I get a bit of form? No joy. Anyways, listen, you could do a whole show on this. In Connacht Senior Club Football Championship quarterfinal, Turlestrain, I probably have that wrong. Turlestrain, that's Eamon O'Hara's club versus Castlebar Mitchells. You fancy Castlebar Mitchells there. You have to give Castlebar Mitchells a lot of credit. Mayo is a very tough championship to win. They were humiliated in the All-Ireland final last year, didn't show up at all. They've lost two All-Ireland finals now to two Dublin clubs and been well beaten in both of them, and are still able to come back and win a really, really difficult Mayo championship. And you'd have to say it'll take a good team to beat them in Connacht, and maybe they're like, just have that Mayo disease when they come down to Croke Park for an All-Ireland final.
They're 10-1, they won the All-Ireland. That's
a very good price.
Yeah, it's a good price. I know it's tough. They still have St Bridges and Corrifin.
I wouldn't have thought they would have been that far outsiders.
I don't think so. I don't think they should be anyway. Like, and we don't need me to explain to you again how bets work, but but 10-1 is a very tasty price. Do you see actually what's happening in that fixture that's been played on a Saturday? If they draw, the replay's on Sunday.
Right.
So we can get back in the fixtures again if
that's
you want.
That's gas. That is on a Saturday. And why is the Dublin one on a Saturday? Is there any reason they're not?
I'm not sure why that's a Saturday.
That's Castleknock, who were only set up in 1998. Play a defensive system by all accounts, so they'll need it against St Vincent's, who are an absolutely outstanding team. Probably been the best club team in the country in the last 5 years. You know, they've won two All-Irelands and they've won two Leinsters.
Mm.
Oh, they've only won they've won two Leinsters and they've won an All-Ireland.
One more.
You know, and they've just been the outstanding team in my eyes. And win again, coming out of the toughest championship in the whole country and winning, they've won three out of the last four of those, you know. And who'd be betting against them winning another Leinster this year?
And this is Dearmo's chance at redemption, like, for not getting nominated for Footballer of the Year. He's coming up against Kieran Kilkenny, who I'm sure Dearmo won't think it, but some of us will be thinking, why is Kieran Kilkenny nominated and someone like Connolly's been overlooked?
Kieran Kilkenny plays in midfield for Castleknock, actually. And I can only imagine, I'm not going to the game, I can only imagine in a defensive system, because Kieran Kilkenny slows up the game in a Dublin system, who play a lovely brand of football. Imagine Kieran Kilkenny 1-2. I'd say he's on about 78 possessions a game on average.
In fairness to Kieran Kilkenny, he's a brilliant footballer, and he's had a couple of average games where he wasn't driving forward like he can. Like, we all know Kieran Kilkenny can leave someone on toast if he wants. But you see the Mayo game we're talking about, or the start of the Connacht match, Paddy Durgan scored 1-3 in the Mayo final. Right, and that's good enough. He's playing halfback. Then he's marking Kevin McLaughlin, and he scored 1-3, and he came off after 45 minutes.
Really?
He did all this in the final.
Are you sure that's the same Durkin now?
Yep, that's the same one.
Jeez, I could nearly pull you up on this one now. I'm not sure that's. I think there's another Durkin.
Text him.
I think there's a Durkin that's a forward.
No, that's Paddy Durkin.
Wow.
Yeah, yep. Him, Barry Moran and Neil Douglas, they all got the goals as well, quite fittingly.
Right, okay. Well, listen, Castlebar are an excellent team. So that's all the games at the weekend anyways. Pick the one you want to go to, and I hope you all enjoy it. Listen, we'll be back next Wednesday at the usual time. I'll see you all then. Good luck.
finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.